Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSR HealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome to Center Point. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar. In this show, we will discuss ways that we can journey to our own centers. This can help us access our inner resources to improve our physical abilities and health, our mental strength, our emotional well-being, and our spirituality. Today, I'm very happy to introduce our special guest, Dr. Harvey Zarin. Hello, Harvey.
Hi.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's my privilege. Thank you.
Let me tell the audience a little bit about you. Dr. Zarin has been in practice since 1975. He practiced medicine as a clinical cardiologist and internist for 32 years. And then for more than 20 years, he has subsequently focused on working with people who have medically unexplained physical symptoms in which no clinical test has revealed a cause and for whom no medical treatment has resulted in significant relief of suffering. His current practice utilizes healing relationships and clinical hypnosis and is founded on the amazing wholeness of our human biology and design. Now, Dr. Zarin, he graduated from Columbia College and then the Tufts University School of Medicine. He was trained clinically at Boston City Hospital and the New England Medical Center. And his work continues to focus on wellness and health nutrition, and it has extensive history taking until a person's condition makes sense enough to him that he can help make sense of it to that person, and then to move on to a treatment plan for relief of that person's suffering. We're going to talk about that at length. So again, thank you so much for joining us, Harvey.
My pleasure.
So I'm wondering, I'd like to start at the beginning, because many of my clients are adolescents, young adults, trying to figure out about a career. How did you choose the medical path to start with?
Well, that was kind of simple, actually. In the fourth grade, I was the doctor in a Christmas play. And I borrowed a stethoscope from my family physician, and I stood at the bedside of another kid on stage, and I said, this is what I want to do with my life. And everything from then on was devoted to going into medicine.
That is funny. Now, did you go into cardiology because of that stethoscope as well?
No, the cardiology, I did my internal medicine training at Boston City Hospital. And at the time, when I first entered medicine, I was going to be a family physician. And my first rotation as an intern was actually with a pediatric emergency room at Boston City Hospital. And for a variety of reasons, I found taking care of sick children distressing to me personally at that time. And so I decided I would become an internist. And so I entered a medical training program, and two of the faculty people were young cardiologists who were studying for their boards, and they were so dynamic and so bright and so energizing that out of the 13 of us, I believe 9 of us went into cardiology from that internship class.
Oh, it's funny. I think within this decade you were there, I also did a rotation at Boston Children's Hospital, but fortunately it didn't affect me. At first, I stayed with pediatrics, that emergency room. I remember it well.
Yeah.
So as you entered the medical field, were you surprised anyway in a positive way or negative way when you first started medicine?
I would say enthralled with the whole thing. When we worked at Boston City, when I entered training, the hours were horrible. They were 36 hours on, 12 off, and you had 2 weeks off a year. And we had the most incredible morale of any group I've ever been around working under those conditions. I know now there are marked limits, and for good reason, on hours. But at the time, at Boston City, we were taking care of a very underserved population, and it was an amazing training experience in so many ways. And I chose Boston City, actually, because I said the first thing I wanted to do was to know how to keep people alive. And once I did that, I felt I would have time to branch out and expand my medical practice. And it was an extraordinary practice at Boston City at that time. Something like 30% of the patients had active tuberculosis, and 80% of the male patients who were admitted to the hospital ended up in the DTs, delirium tremens, alcohol withdrawal. And we just took care of these incredibly sick people who were very, very grateful for getting care, any care. And we bonded as a group, and I never stopped being enthralled with the practice of medicine. Still to this day, I find it energizing and amazing. And I'm constantly amazed at the depth of human beings given a chance, their wholeness, their incredible presentations. And I still relish every single contact with a patient that I have right to this day. I graduated medical school in 1969, and I've never stopped liking humans.
You know, it's interesting. So you went that adult internal way, and I went with the children, because for me, I found it easy to take care of a child who has a whole life ahead of him or her, and you know, typically has not caused their illnesses. For me, it was hard to work with some adults. I guess I've learned to be more non-judgmental as I grew older, but taking care, for example, a person with a difficulty with alcoholism, as a medical student, I was thinking, you know, I'm going to take care of it and you're going to go do it again. And that didn't seem quite right. How do you deal with that? Or did that even cross your mind?
At the time, I went in seeking to be a family practitioner. And what I didn't know at that time that I've learned subsequently is that I have a personal history of childhood trauma, which is why I was so distressed about taking care of children. But I had no conscious knowledge of that at that time. I just knew that being around sick children bothered me. But I have to say, as I went through my career, those times when I took care of somebody and I made a house call up here in the North Shore of Massachusetts, and I made a house call and the people gave me two squash and a couple of tomatoes from their garden, I went home and I felt probably the most rewarded of all the times. And I know they were all covered by Medicare or whatever, but getting those symbols of gratitude is how I had originally seen myself as a family practitioner. And as I say, when I chose a specialty, I did not have conscious knowledge of my own history of trauma.
And how do you deal, like, with people with obesity, or that's become more of a problem, or alcoholism or drug abuse, when they keep repeating the same behaviors? How do you continue to deal them with kindness? How do you do that?
So the first thing I would say is that it's not clear to me that people choose those things. I know enough about brain function now to recognize that choice requires people to be calm. And the average person who becomes an alcoholic is not living a calm life. And a lot of what happens is patterned after models that they've had in their lives. I think there's no question in my mind that much of the dysfunctional behavior we've seen in the past was related to childhood trauma that was unrecognized and is very, very common. Supposedly one out of three women in the United States suffers some kind of sexual abuse by the age of 18, and one out of every six or seven men. And it's underreported. So we know it's very, very prevalent. And those people who aren't diagnosed appropriately or don't run into the right kind of care and do the work to deal with childhood trauma often end up with addictions and dysfunctional behavior and problems relating to other people. And I would say that in my practice of people who have unknown origin medical situations that are not diagnosed, a huge number of those people have suffered childhood trauma and don't know, aren't aware of it, or aren't aware of the ramifications of it. And it's oppressive how frequent that is and how much of a horrible adverse effect it has on health. I will say that if people are really dysfunctional in practice now, I can't work with them. I don't work with them. In my career as a cardiologist and an internist, I turned away 7 patients out of all those years, 7 patients, and all of those because they tried to abuse me for drugs, and I found out. Those people I asked to leave my practice. They were the only ones. So it's an understanding. I don't do addiction work now as a specific practice. Same thing, I don't deal with weight loss or cigarette smoking and things like that. I've chosen pretty much to limit my practice to people with undiagnosed medical physical symptoms. And it's been incredibly rewarding to do this work. So I'm not exposed day to day in my practice to those kinds of issues, but I really understand the behavior that results from a horrible, horrible life's journey, and it's distressing. And in our culture right now, it's further distressing to watch how we've dropped manners, we've dropped simple, comfortable language, we've dropped time as an important part of healthcare. We've dropped, everything's become efficiency and finance. And that doesn't lend itself to good behavior or lack of distressing addictions. In a nutshell.
Tell me about your transition from family practice in cardiology to treating patients with undiagnosed or physical symptoms without a known cause, because many times doctors tell people, oh, we don't know the cause, and they'll go away, I can't help you, but you transitioned. How did that happen?
So I didn't do family practice. I did internal medicine, so with adults, just to clarify that part. So after doing clinical cardiology, and I think I functioned at a fairly high level, according to the responses I got from my colleagues and my patients. I got up one day and said, what else do I want to do before I die? And when will that be? And I actually left practice and studied psychoneuroimmunology, and then I got involved with the psychobiology of gene expression. And had learned as a cardiologist, I had gone to be trained in clinical hypnosis, probably, it's not 100% clear, but probably at the request of a man by the name of Stephen Pauker, who died actually this year. Steve was a genius. He suffered from cerebral palsy, but he was a genius. He was not only a clinical cardiologist at Tufts, but he was in the decision-making faculty at MIT, and he melded those two things together. He was, I think, one of the young people involved with the Institute of Medicine as well. But at any rate, I learned clinical hypnosis, and I just got up one day and said, what else do I want to do? I was very happy practicing, but I went out and studied for 2 years, and then created a practice working with people who had medical, physical symptoms, and the etiology wasn't clear. And I've done that for about the last 20 years or so, and it's incredibly rewarding. Incredibly rewarding.
Well, you're
that's the way it happened. And I was lucky. My wife doesn't like to buy things, so I wasn't locked into the financial aspects of practice as much as some other people are. We didn't have a lot of lifestyle things to support. And so I had space to do it. And she's been very supportive through all this time.
Were you exposed to psychoneuroimmunology as part of the hypnosis world?
You know, I never did the practice of healthcare the same as everybody else. I really had branched out a lot. I was the head of a group that was involved in melding complementary therapies and conventional medicine. And I had been exposed to almost every kind of complementary practice you can imagine. While I was practicing and still in cardiology, I always had medical students. And my last group of medical students, the last few years, the cardiology medical students couldn't bring a stethoscope. They could not. And I got them involved in talking to patients. And I had a stipend from the medical school, and that stipend was spent on getting each student a nutrition consult, a massage, an acupuncture treatment, and then any of the other things that they got interested in. And those people, when they graduated and went into practice, are referring patients appropriately to many complementary therapies because they've witnessed how they work. But in the course of all of that, I went into, just inquisitively, started reading about psychoneuroimmunology and got progressively involved in the wholeness of people. And I'm still enthralled with our human design. I'm very excited about it. And I understand that our wholeness is biological. It's not conceptual. We have a biology that's based on gene expression. And in that biology, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, social aspects of life are not real biologically. So anything affecting any part of you is affecting all of those areas all of the time, some subtle level, through the biological mechanisms by which we experience life. And unfortunately, we're in a healthcare system that thinks you need a doctor, a psychiatrist, a social worker, a priest, and a best friend to get well from a cold. And it just doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Can you give us an example of how your viewpoint as it evolved to think about people in that fashion? How did it affect your cardiology practice? Give us a patient who came to you for cardiological issues and explain how you treated him or her.
I remember very vividly a woman who came who had had a car accident from a cardiac arrhythmia called ventricular tachycardia. She crashed her car. And she was admitted to the hospital, and she turned out to be someone who in those days was called multiple personality disorder. She was a young woman in her late 30s, and she had asthma, which finally was the cause of her death, actually. And she was having classic chest pain. And I believed her. And we did all kinds of things with this lady to find out what her underlying heart disease was. And I mean, we literally, back in those days, we didn't have the kind of imaging techniques we have now, but I believed this lady's story. And finally, I was able to convince one of my associates to do a cardiac catheterization on her and look at her coronary arteries, in spite of the fact she was a young woman. And he catheterized her and found that her coronary arteries were normal. But he was a very bright guy, and while he had the introducer sheath in her femoral artery, and before he had totally taken the catheter out that he was working with, she said very quietly, "Oh, there's that terrible pain again." And he, instead of saying, "Well, you know, there's nothing wrong with this woman, it's in her head," they checked her blood pressure, her heart rhythm didn't change, her EKG didn't change really. But he put the catheters back in and he squirted dye into her right coronary and it had totally occluded with spasm. Not because of the catheter. He found it that way. And she was put on huge amounts of medication. and didn't totally stop her pain. And then one day I took her in, and I had learned something about hypnosis, but I didn't know anything really about it that I know now. And I decided to try to put this woman in trance during the time I was caring for her after the catheterization and see if I could help her. If she could close the artery, maybe she could reopen it. And it turned out that I couldn't find language that didn't trigger her into a panic attack. I worked for a month to try to. And that issue was because of prior trauma. And I found her clutch her fist and then let go of it and noticed the tingling in her hand. And when the tingling was there, I had to relate that to her coronary artery. And later, she had pain, took a lot of extra medicine, didn't help. She did what I asked her to do with her hand, and the pain stopped. And she actually never had another attack of it. And it's all, nothing is separate. Everything is related. That's one of the stories that stands out in my mind. But I have to be very patient.
That's a very dramatic and informative story. I think as we continue our discussion, one of the things I've noticed is that people with physically known diagnoses also develop medically unexplained physical symptoms. And those are tricky to figure out, but they respond like this lady did to right. hypnosis or other psychological therapy. We'll be right back after these messages at CenterPoint with Dr. Ron Unbar.
Coming attraction, Life Guide for Teens, Harnessing Your Inner Power to Be Healthy, Happy, and Confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Unbar to be published early 2025. Dr. Ambar's renowned counseling practice, CenterPoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Ambar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Ambar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit DrAnbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Unbar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At CenterPoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at CenterPointMedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Audiobooks gives you instant access to over 50,000 of the bestsellers and hottest book titles in romance, mystery, fiction, and many other genres. Just visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Audiobooks to get started.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
More exhilarating talk. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to CenterPoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Unbar. Our guest today, Dr. Harvey Zarin, who's sharing highlights from his career as an internist, clinical cardiologist, and now somebody who works with medically unexplained physical symptoms or patients with those things. Can you give us an example Harvey, what kind of medically unexplained symptom might present in a patient that you see?
All kinds of pain situations. People who have, I've taken care of people who had unremitting itch, pruritus. I've taken care of people with all kind of, with seizures that had normal EEGs and CAT scans and all those things. It's a whole variety of things. Sometimes it's progressive distress, and they get progressively worse, suffering from all kinds of physical complaints. I don't see people for who have just, and I'm not belittling just, but emotional disorders or mental disorders. People who see me have to have a physical complaint. Sometimes it's palpitations. Sometimes it's a whole variety. It's the whole host of things that you can imagine people suffer from, where no X-ray has shown anything, no blood work has shown anything, and treatments have pretty much failed. And I generally see people who've been all over the place and end up being told they have some sort of emotional or psychiatric disorder and tried on a whole bunch of medicines that didn't ever help.
How do people find you?
Word of mouth. Pretty much word of mouth. Occasionally I get a referral from another practitioner or a physician. But my work is very time intensive. I can tell you that my initial history with a new patient averages about 6 hours. When I was working more in person before COVID, I would do that all in one sitting. People would bring lunch. I would urge them to bring lunch, and we'd take a lunch break. But when I'm working virtually, I have to break it up because you can't work virtually for 6 hours and still be seen, either as a patient or a practitioner, without a break.
So explain what you do those 6 hours. What do you talk about?
I take history. So when people were getting well, I decided to come up with a little introspection of what was it I was doing. And my approach is pretty much biological. So we have 25,000 genes, which are portions of our DNA, that turn on and make active molecules. The reason you only need 25,000 is that the molecules that get made can work alone or in clusters. So out of 25,000 genes, you get a huge number of biologically active molecules that give you hair color, eye color, your emotions, your immune system function. All of those things come from 25,000 genes. And the genes, which are portions of your DNA, those 25,000 genes make up about 2% of your DNA. And it turns out that all the rest of the DNA, after extensive work with 32 centers internationally, started in 2003 and started publishing in 2012, 2% of your DNA makes the molecules that give you your experience of being alive day to day. And the other 98% is mostly switches that control the 2%. And it turns out you can't change the code of your DNA willfully, but you can change the switches. And that's the work that I do. And the work is premised on the fact that for me, mind, which is a flow of information through those molecules I just mentioned and the nervous system and human energy, which travels mostly in fascia, mind for me has two parts. It's got conscious, which means I'm talking to this wonderful man on the radio, and subconscious, which pretty much runs everything else. And I believe that the subconscious mind, over our evolution into this extraordinary organism that we are, I believe that the subconscious mind evolved as supervisor in charge of wellness and survival. And if it perceives that your wellness or survival is being adversely affected by some behavior in your life or something going on in your life, it will use those gene switches to give you some kind of distress to get your attention that something needs attention. all distress, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, social, of any kind, is not punishment from an errant divinity. It's there to tell you that something's wrong and needs your attention. Something needs your attention. So the 6 hours of history really is to find out what is it in this person's life that needs attention. And then we pay attention, and the symptoms more often than not go away.
Do they go away as a result of your paying attention?
Yes.
Can you tell a story about that?
Sure. One that comes to mind is a woman who came to my practice after 4 years of having vulvodynia, which is pain in her external genitalia. And she had had every test, including multiple biopsies and images and whatever. And I took my 6 hours of history with her. And then at the end, I do a specialized history, one of the questions of which is, what's the worst thing you ever did? And this is at the end of 6 hours or 5.5 hours of all the other intensive history. And she got up from her chair and wrung her hands and stood behind the chair in which she was sitting. And she said to me, you told me nobody would ever know about my story, you know, identified as me. And I said, absolutely. If anybody knows anything about you, it'll be because you tell them. And she said, no one in my entire life knows this, but prior to my getting married, I had 3 abortions. My husband doesn't even know. No one in my family knows. And she sat back down after I had reassured her that she wouldn't be identified ever with this story. And during my history, I knew that she had been raised pretty strictly as a Catholic in the Catholic religion. And she and I talked about each of these abortions, each of the situations that resulted in her having an abortion. And it was pretty clear to both of us that at the time that happened, that was her best decision, given everything going on in her life. And I'm not judgmental with people. We talk out where they are, what their situation is. I don't get moral with when we did that and she realized that each of the abortions had been the best choice she could have made at that time, given her situation and her beliefs, the pain went away. Stopped having pain. And that's one of the graphic stories that I remember.
Thank you very much for sharing that. And it gives us a better understanding of the quote-unquote magic of what you do. When we come back, I'd like to talk to you about how people can emulate you and how what you do can be fit into the Western medical model. I'm not sure it quite fits, but I'll get your thought on that. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Anbar.
Make-A-Wish has been granting life-changing wishes for children and families for over 40 years. A wish is something that gives children the opportunity to look outside their illness and restore a sense of childhood back to the child. With the help of donors and more than 43,000 worldwide volunteers, Make-A-Wish has collectively granted more than 520,000 wishes worldwide. Dr. Anbar has referred many patients to Make-A-Wish. To make a donation, go to worldwish.org. That's worldwish.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Anbar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit DrAnbar.com.
Reach your health and fitness goals. Whether you want to lose weight, learn to dance, build muscle, or just live healthy, Beachbody gives you unlimited access to the nation's most popular fitness and weight loss solutions. Visit our advertiser page and click on Beachbody now.
Dr. Ron Ambar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Coming attraction, life guide for teens harnessing your inner power to be healthy, happy, and confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Ambar to be published early 2025. Dr. Ambar's renowned counseling practice, Centerpoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Ambar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Centerpoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Ambar. Our special guest, Dr. Harvey Zarin, who is sharing how he treats people with medically unexplained physical symptoms by taking an extensive history that sometimes resolves the problem once it's taken. So, Harvey, I guess my question is, if somebody wanted to emulate you, doctors these days don't have 6 hours to spend with one patient.
Well, I think that's one of the issues that needs to be addressed. When somebody that I see, for instance, with what some people call psychogenic or non-epileptic seizures, for instance, I remember vividly a person who had 8 CAT scans, 8 MRIs, 3 lumbar punctures, in a whole series of hospitalizations in the Boston area. And all of those tests, including her brainwave tests, were normal during these seizures. And she came out of a convalescent home. She wasn't allowed to drive, a young woman in her 60s, brought to me by her niece. And again, I only take histories. I don't do tests. I don't write prescriptions. I don't do physical exams. I just take histories now. And this woman, I took her history as she had it, and then knowing that she had all these normal tests, she was seated in my office, and I asked her if she wanted to have an experience with clinical hypnosis, and she said yes. And I put her in a trance, and she promptly had a seizure. Now, if I didn't know that she'd had all these normal tests in good places, I'd have probably wet my pants and called 911. But since I knew that all these tests were normal, she was seated in this chair, and I leaned over, and I quietly said, I want to thank your subconscious mind for showing me what it is that we're dealing with here. And the seizure stopped, and she never had another seizure. Now, she was on 11 medications when she came to see me, and the biggest challenge I had taking care of her afterwards was finding someone to wean her successfully off the medications. And it turned out her primary care doctor was very good at that and was willing to do it. And I occasionally get a postcard from her. She travels around with her grandchildren. And she got her life back.
You know, you mentioned subconscious, and you and I have had many conversations about subconscious in the past, because I do a lot of work, and I do a lot of work direct with the subconscious, as you know. And I'm wondering, when I meet people, take history is much shorter. I don't have the time.
Right.
Make the time. But, I find that things that are difficult for them to discuss, they often avoid talking about, which is maybe why you need to take 6 hours for them to get to this is what happened to me in the past. On the other hand, I've found with a lot of patients, when you allow the subconscious to speak, the relevant history spills out fairly quickly.
And I'm wondering, have you done that? Have you been able to short circuit, but cut down the time to get the history, to get to the bottom by asking the subconscious to say what's relevant here?
So the answer is yes, I think I could shorten it, and there are times when I will ask in a hypnotic trance the subconscious mind. But I don't get the same results because the issue isn't that this person has, for instance, a seizure. It's that she's in relationship with her family and the other people in her life around this story of seizures, how she's been treated by healthcare, how she's been treated in her life, how her life has narrowed down, and shortening the history doesn't allow me to work with all those things. Because the work to me isn't just relieving symptoms. People's lives change. Their kids do better in school. They have different relationships. Their life becomes much richer, and they notice more, and they engage much more with nature and other people. And a whole host of things just improves in terms of the quality of their life. So and I talk to people about this. For instance, we know that anything unfamiliar triggers the fight or flee part of the autonomic nervous system, the sympathetic nervous system. So it might be something wonderful, and you still will get anxious. And I tell people that as you get better and your suffering stops, the lack of suffering may in itself be unfamiliar and make you anxious. And we work through that. There's a whole host of things that I can do. Now, yes, it takes me 6 hours, but look what the healthcare system saved in terms of MRIs, CAT scans, and hospitalizations with the lady with the seizure problem. So you have to decide how you want to look at it. Healthcare would be a lot better off if people spent long periods of time with each patient. On the other hand, now we know that there aren't as many practitioners, primarily because of COVID recently. So the demand is high and the supply isn't what it needs to be, but it could be improved. But we have dismissed the value of time and human interaction. Now, you're one of my mentors, Ron, and I happen to know that the way you do what you do is so engaging that the young people you work with, you change their lives because of how you do what you do, not just because of what you do. And that, to me, is the crux of this whole thing. And the way we've focused in healthcare on finance and efficiency and limited the time that we get to spend with each patient is great for the finances of healthcare, but it's not necessarily so great for helping people get well.
It's actually not great for the finances of healthcare because,
well,
as you said,
it's horrible
MRIs
for the finances. No, I meant for the income of that practice, for the income of the practitioner and that particular practice. The overwhelming cost of healthcare is up dramatically because of it. And
correct.
We can't seem to change that because, you know, in America, people don't want to give up their income. I understand. I totally get it. But we could if we paid people for time spent with patients rather than tests and procedures. I think we would come out with much better health care. Not that I'm against procedures. Listen, I still invite people to go for heart surgery. And every now and again, I bump into somebody who just hasn't been diagnosed. I remember a woman who was a nursing supervisor who came to my practice because of 3 years of abdominal discomfort, 35 CAT scans, all showing constipation. She came in, and she sat down, and she was squirming in discomfort. That's not what I see in my practice. And she said, I need a heating pad. I haven't seen that either before. And I sent her to a really good diagnostic surgeon, and in 20 minutes he said, she has colonic inertia. And I knew, by the way, that one of her grandchildren had Hirschsprung's disease. And she ended up needing 3 feet of her bowel removed. And when they opened her up, her bowel was like 9 inches in diameter. That was the constipation they were seeing. It wasn't functioning. And they couldn't stop the pain.
Well,
10 minutes in the in the doctor's office is not going to solve that kind of thing. But a good part of what you do with people is because of you and how you do what you do. It's not just the answers that they come out with on the computer.
Right. Well, when we come back, I want to take a trip with you 10 or 20 years in the future and see what you see as one potential future of medicine when people recognize that time can be healing, time with a doctor, sufficient time can heal. But I wanted to explore a couple other potential futures of medicine with you. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Unberg.
More than 30,000 children and adults of every race and ethnic group in the U.S. have cystic fibrosis. Cystic fibrosis is a disease causing long-lasting lung infections, limiting the ability to breathe over time. Dr. Anbar participated in research that helped advance survival of cystic fibrosis patients by more than 20 years. He encourages you to donate to the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation to help find a cure. It's easy to donate. Go to cff.org. That's cff.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
Constant Contact and your small business make a perfect fit for marketing. They give you what you need to succeed. Fast and easy email marketing at your fingertips. Visit the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on Constant Contact to start your marketing.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Ambar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com. or visit dranbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Ambar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California, and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Centerpoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar. Our special guest, Dr. Harvey Zarin, a clinical cardiologist and internist who now works with people with medically unexplained physical symptoms. We've talked about how medicine could be improved if we gave clinicians sufficient time and reimbursement to work with patients. But I've been thinking about this for a while, and I want to throw out a couple of somewhat radical ideas and see what you think of them. So, again, thinking about medicine in the future, how the system could change, one idea I had was, and actually both ideas involve AI. So the first idea is that in 10 or 20 years, when AI gets pretty good in terms of diagnosing people, that we will take out the model of doctors spending time with patients and put in medical technicians. So these are people who are trained for, let's say, 3 to 6 months, like emergency medical technicians. They will follow what the AI tells them, and they will be the human interface with patients. And the way I'm thinking, well, maybe the system could work because they could spend lots of time with patients, and there could be many more of them. They won't need 8 years of medical training, but only in a few months. It will not cost as much, and people's health care could improve. What do you make of that model?
I think it's a helpful model for for some things. It's not clear to me that it's going to help everything. And the reason that I say that is that I believe in our evolution. There were two supportive things that followed the evolution of the extraordinary design that we are. And our evolution directly is about 6 million years. We evolved 3 million years ago the level of the brain that lets us introspect and the hand design that we have. But in our evolution, the supports that we had were nature and other people, essentially, in the sense of relationships. And we don't lean on those things the way we used to. And the way our design is that the mechanical way of doing healthcare is great for certain kinds of emergent things and things like pneumonia and stuff, but it doesn't help people with the wholeness necessarily. And it's that that dependence on wholeness that's important. So it's not clear to me that AI can address that as effectively as a live person can. There's no question that a lot of erroneous diagnoses and a lot of testing and other things either is not necessary or is misdirected. And AI, I believe, can help with that. But I think contact with a live person who's trained in the nuances of our biological wholeness has a lot to do with healing. The system, biology we have, I believe, always works towards healing given a chance. The difficulty is it's often just not given that chance. And so I think AI has marvelous opportunities, and I think what you described could handle a whole bunch of things that are not being dealt with now appropriately. But I still would like to see something intensive in someone who's trained in interpersonal relationships adequately to understand the physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, social aspects, and who would be given time to do that. It'd be nice if we did it at home, if we lived in a culture that gave us time and space rather than noise and 24-hour day lighting and all the other things that I know are adverse to the design that we have. So I think there's great possibilities in what you suggest, but I'm still concerned that it's not going to be dealt with in the way the real wholeness that works with the kind of people that I see. I don't know. It'd be interesting. It's kind of my suggestion. My thought is that we'll probably go in that direction out of need, but we could be doing this differently.
Right, but I'm thinking that the medical technicians I speak of, they could spend 6 hours with people, and they could be trained to do that.
Well, so you have to remember that my training was with a lot of experience with human beings and having the time to spend with them. I don't know how you train people in short order to do that. I don't have any question that it doesn't have to be a physician per se, but there are other aspects of medical training that might be important in that whole thing. It's an intriguing concept, Ron. I think it really is. And I have no question that AI is going to improve a whole lot if we give it a chance.
Here's one other radical idea. I like thinking science fiction kind of things. So in therapy, I believe ultimately the patient finds a solution for themselves. And we as therapists or physicians facilitate their finding the solution. Right. And so I'm thinking, could AI be trained to take a history, gauge its responses to the patient based on how the patient responds to the history taking, and do a lot of that work for us, because ultimately the patient has to discover themselves. Now, I know rapport is not there. I get that part. But, again, trying to think of different models. How do you think the patient would react?
I don't know. I know in Japan they're using robots to take care of older people in facilities because they don't have adequate personnel. And it's great for mechanical care, and a lot of patients don't find it warm and fuzzy. No matter what the robot says, it's still a robot. But it is intriguing. The other piece that's ignored a lot, and you're very good at this, I know, is intuition. And the question is, how does AI reflect intuition, which is the results of everything you sense, know, believe, feel, remember? All of that comes in, and you're sitting with someone, and suddenly a thought or words come out of your mouth, or a thought comes into you, and it turns out it's all appropriate and works really well. And the question is, can AI learn intuition?
Right, so intuition to me is my own subconscious speaking to me, and based on my experience.
Yep.
What I've thought about, I've asked about that, and I think one thing AI could have over me is it could observe better than I do. Like, I miss details on a patient. I'm not actually a very good observer. How could it be a lot better? And AI, if it has a trained camera on the patient, whatever, looks for nonverbal responses, might be trained to do a much better job than I do responding to where the patient is. And as far as intuition goes, if intuition is part of it, my subconscious has noticed things that I haven't noticed and feeds them to me, maybe the AI can skip that part. It'll already notice what I didn't, if that makes sense.
It would be, there's no question that factual stuff could clearly be improved. There's no question. I don't know about the issue of intuition. I love the concept that says the human brain is a remarkable organism. It works 24/7, 365 days, from the time you're born until you fall in love. And I don't know how AI fits into that concept.
Well,
but I
Harvey,
think it really can help with a whole host of things that we don't do well. So I'm intrigued, but with your vision, I really am.
So Harvey, thank you for taking us 50 years in the past, and we went 20 years in the future, so we covered three generations here in our talk. I really appreciate your sharing so much of your life story with us. It's really enriched all of us. So thank you.
Thank you, Ron. Thank you for the opportunity. I'm very, very, I feel very privileged.
And everyone, I wish for you an excellent week. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Anbar.